Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Stamped from the Beginning, The Definitive History of Racist Ideas in America by Ibram X. Kendi. Narrated by Avery Kidd Waddell. Preface to the 2023 edition. The first edition of Stamped from the Beginning arrived in 2016 during the closing days of a period of virulent denial in the United States. For 8 years, producers of racist ideas had been convincing people that the election of the first black president in 2008 demonstrated that a nation rife with inequity and injustice was post-racial. Indeed, the history of racist ideas is the history of this denial. This convincing people that nations with widespread racial inequities are not racist, that notions of racial hierarchy are not racist, that inequity-producing policies are not racist, that the powerful people producing these policies and ideas in these nations are not racist, that the badged and unbadged terror-conserving black deprivation is not racist. Recounting the racist careers of powerful people holds up a mirror to this history of denial. Take the billionaire real estate tycoon who became the 45th president of the United States. Days after first proposing his Muslim ban in December 2015, Donald Trump told CNN's Don Lemon, "I am the least racist person that you have ever met." It became a familiar refrain during his presidency. No matter how many immigrants or voters of color he called illegal, no matter how many black women he called nasty or stupid, no matter how many white supremacists he called very fine people, or told to stand back and stand by, or incited to overturn elections, the mirror of Trumpism reflected back to people in the United States and beyond a monstrous image of the carnage of their racism and their reflex to deny it all. And some people did not like what they saw, especially when they saw white supremacists murdering churchgoers in Charleston or marching in Charlottesville, especially when they saw black people dying at the highest rates from COVID-19. Especially when they saw Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin murder George Floyd. On Memorial Day in 2020, it all, the racism, became undeniable. It all, the denying and the lying, became untenable. The percentage of Americans who ended their denial and told Monmouth pollsters that racism is a big problem leaped from 51% January 2015 to 68% July 2016, and again to 76% by June 2020. In the summer of 2020, these Americans rallied against racism and police violence in the largest series of demonstrations in U.S. history. Upward of 26 million people hit the streets. Many more encouraged the demonstrators from their homes as they quarantined from the pandemic. Some of these quarantining people were reading Stamped from the Beginning. One emotion I have witnessed consistently from readers over the years is shock. Shock at the cruelty and endurance of racist ideas. Shock at the boldness and oldness of anti-racist ideas. Shock that they were just learning this history, and a wish that they had learned it in school. It all pushed me to move out of my comfort zone of writing narrative histories for adults and to work with several remarkable creators on adaptations. Jason Reynolds remixed the book for teens and Stamped Racism, Anti-Racism, and You. Sonia Cherry Paul remixed the remix for younger children and Stamped for Kids, with Rochelle Baker supplying the art. Cartoonist Joel Christian Gill created a graphic novel edition of Stamped from the Beginning. Filmmakers Roger Ross Williams, Alisa Payne, and Mara Brock Akil adapted the book onto the big screen for Netflix. All these adaptations met the people where they are, because anti-black racist ideas are constantly meeting people where they are. And young and old people need to identify these harmful ideas so they can protect their minds from them, so they can join in the anti-racist struggle to construct a just and habitable society for us all. I hoped we were on the way to building an anti-racist society, but the unprecedented wave of anti-racist demonstrations in 2020 did not result in a successful revolution against racism in the United States. If anything, Americans and American institutions faced a counter-revolution to uproot the budding anti-racism, a counter-revolution of contradictions and absurdities. Police violence against people demonstrating against police violence. Republicans and Democrats raging against transferring funding from the highest combined police budget in the world to one of the lowest combined public education budgets in the wealthy world. Attacks on voters of color by people claiming that elections were stolen from them. Invasions of Capitol buildings and terrorist attacks on Americans by self-identified patriots, forcing births and the end to child tax credits by the self-identified Parents' Rights Party, efforts to cancel women's marches, Black Lives Matter, wokeism, the 1619 Project, marriage equality, critical race theory, trans kids, and anti-racist and queer books by critics of cancel culture, reframing anti-racist as anti-white, as white supremacists did during their massive resistance to anti-racist policies in the 1860s and 1960s. This second edition of Stamped from the Beginning, with updated terminology and concepts, with the removal of ableist and carceral language, with a painstakingly thorough fact check, and with a gargantuan note section, arrived in a historical period distinct from the original edition. In both 2016 and 2023, and throughout history, the conservators of racism have consistently and absurdly evoked some derivation of, "I'm not racist." You are the racist. Enslavers called abolitionists vicious. Lynchers called the lynched barbaric. Segregationists called civil rights activists tyrannical. Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson said Michael Brown looked like a demon. To be racist is not just to deny. To be racist is to project. Historical conditions often shape the emphasis. Racism on the offensive, denials. Racism on the defensive, projections. All the while, those denying, those projecting, refuse to define their ideas as racist. In fact, they refuse to define the term racist in any coherent and consistent way. And it has been that way since the beginning. Thus, the subtitle of this book is The Definitive History of Racist Ideas in America, which is not to claim that this book is the most authoritative piece of scholarship on the subject. It is to say that this book serves to define racist and anti-racist ideas through revealing their history from their birth in the 15th century to their maturity in the 21st century. An understanding of the life story of a phenomenon is necessary to accurately define a phenomenon. Not just define, Stamped from the Beginning reckons with the devastating effects. Anti-black racist ideas convince people that the original sin of the United States, of the modern world, is black people. And thus, black inferiority was stamped from the beginning. And thus, the problem is black people. Not racist power, not racist policy, not racist violence. This history book reveals why, after all these years, to be black is to still ask oneself, as W.E.B. Du Bois did in 1903, how does it feel to be a problem? Stamped from the Beginning shows how, after all these years, to be anti-racist is to still ask the racist world, how does it feel to deny the problem? Ibram X. Kendi, January 23rd, 2008. 2023. Preface to the first paperback edition. I started working on this project squarely in the middle of the presidential age of Barack Obama. No one could fathom back in 2012 that the reality television star trolling Obama about the authenticity of his birth certificate would succeed him in the White House. But Donald Trump's birther theory, as it came to be known, proved to be the beginning of his successful presidential campaign of bigotry. It proved to be the beginning of the end of the Obama era that was supposed to continue with the election of the first woman president of the United States. Trump's election left many Americans in shock, in search of serious answers to their serious questions. How could a Donald Trump follow Barack Obama into the presidency? How could the candidate of angry bigots, the Klan's candidate, the stop and frisk candidate, the candidate of border walls, the candidate that said a Latino judge can't be objective and that African Americans and Hispanics live in hell? How could this birther theorist follow the first black president? How could Trump rise when Obama's rise seemed to make it impossible? Neither of the two popular Obama-era racial histories prepared shocked Americans for the advent of Donald Trump. His election fit neither the post-racial narrative of the end of racial history nor the narrative of the march of racial progress. His election fit neither the arrival narrative after the 1960s nor the progressive narrative that racist policies have become more covert and racist ideas have become more implicit since the 1960s. Trump's election did not fit these historical narratives because they were grounded in political ideology and racist ideas, not firm scholarly research. The sudden storm of Trumpism has uprooted, should be uprooting, beliefs in these two tales. Americans need a new racial history, rooted in meticulous research, that explains this confusing present and prepares the nation and world for the racial future after Trump. Stamped from the Beginning presents this new history. It does not use terms like overt and covert, or explicit and implicit, to describe the historical evolution of racist ideas or policies. It does not present a post-racial story that begins with the Emancipation Proclamation and ends with the election of Obama. It does not present a story of racial progress, showing how far we have come and the long way we have to go. It does not even present a story of racial progress of two steps forward, as embodied in Obama, and one step back, as embodied in Trump. As I carefully studied America's racial past, I did not see a singular historical force arriving at a post-racial America. I did not see a singular historical force becoming more covert and implicit over time. I did not see a singular historical force taking steps forward and backward on race. I saw two distinct historical forces. I saw a dual and dueling history of racial progress and the simultaneous progression of racism. I saw the anti-racist force of equality and the racist force of inequality marching forward, progressing in rhetoric, in tactics, in policies. When the Obamas of the nation broke through racial barriers, the Trumps of the nation did not just retire to their sunny estates in Florida. They created and sometimes succeeded in putting new and more sophisticated barriers in place. Like the great-grandchildren of Jim Crow voting laws, the New Age voter ID laws that are disenfranchising black Americans in the 21st century. And the Trumps of the nation developed a new round of racist ideas to justify those policies, to redirect the blame for racial disparities away from those new racist policies and onto the supposed black pathology. I am writing this preface on the eve of Trump's 100th day in office as the 45th president of the United States. But I am less concerned about Trump's first 100 days, or his last 100 days for that matter, than what Trump's election reveals about America's racial history. If Barack Obama came to embody America's history of racial progress, then Donald Trump should come to embody America's history of racist progress. And racist progress has consistently followed racial progress. This isn't merely a backlash. It is two historical forces dueling across time and space. It is this duel that I present in Stamped from the Beginning. Taking away the shock of Trump's election and showing its striking consistency within America's history. Trump was shocking for me, but then again, not shocking at all. This history prepared me for Trump and all the other Trumps that could rise one day on the time-worn back of bigotry. Ibram X. Kendi, April 28, 2017. Prologue. Every historian writes in and is impacted by a precise historical moment. My moment, this book's moment, coincides with the televised and untelevised killings of unarmed human beings at the hands of law enforcement officials, and with the televised and untelevised life of the shooting star of Black Lives Matter during America's stormiest nights. I somehow managed to write this book between the heartbreaks of Trayvon Martin and Rekia Boyd and Michael Brown and Freddie Gray and the Charleston Nine and Sandra Bland. Heartbreaks that are a product of America's history of racist ideas as much as this history book of racist ideas is a product of these heartbreaks. Young Black males were 21 times more likely to be killed by police than their white counterparts between 2010 and 2012, according to federal statistics. The underrecorded, underanalyzed racial disparities between female victims of lethal and less lethal police force may be even greater. Federal data show that the median wealth of white households is a staggering 13 times the median wealth of Black households, and Black people are 5 times more likely to be incarcerated than white people. But these statistics should come as no surprise. Most Americans are probably aware of these racial inequities and disparities in police killings, in wealth, in prisons, in nearly every sector of U.S. society. By racial disparities, I mean how racial groups are not statistically represented according to their populations. If Black people make up 13% of the U.S. population, then Black people should own somewhere close to 13% of U.S. wealth. But today, the United States remains nowhere close to racial equity. African Americans own 2.7% of the nation's wealth. This is a racial disparity. And racial disparities are older than the life of the United States. In 2016, the United States celebrated its 240th birthday, but even before Thomas Jefferson and the other founders declared independence, Americans were engaging in a polarizing debate over racial disparities, over why they exist and persist, and over why white Americans as a group were prospering more than Black Americans as a group. Historically, there have been three sides to this heated argument. Segregationist ideas have blamed Black people themselves for the racial disparities. Anti-racist ideas have pointed to racist policy. Assimilationist ideas have conveyed both. Black people and racist policy were to blame for racial disparities. During the ongoing debate over police killings, these three sides to the argument have been on full display. People expressing segregationist ideas have been blaming the recklessly criminal behavior of the Black people who were killed by police officers. Michael Brown was a monstrous, threatening thief. Therefore, Darren Wilson had reason to fear him and to kill him. People expressing anti-racist ideas have been blaming the recklessly racist behavior of the police. The life of this dark-skinned 18-year-old did not matter to Darren Wilson. People expressing assimilationist ideas have tried to have it both ways. Both Wilson and Brown acted recklessly. Listening to this three-way argument in recent years has been like listening to the three distinct arguments you will hear throughout Stamped from the Beginning. For nearly six centuries, anti-racist ideas have been pitted against two kinds of racist ideas, segregationist and assimilationist. The history of racial ideas that follows is the history of these three distinct positions, segregationist, assimilationist, and anti-racist, and how they each have rationalized racial disparities, arguing why white people have remained on the living and winning end, while black people have remained on the losing and dying end. The title, Stamped from the Beginning, comes from a speech that Mississippi Senator Jefferson Davis gave on the floor of the U.S. Senate on April 12, 1860. This future president of the Confederacy objected to a bill funding black education in Washington, D.C. This government was not founded by Negroes nor for Negroes, but by white men for white men. Davis lectured his colleagues. The bill was based on the false notion of racial equality, he declared. The inequality of the white and black races was stamped from the beginning. It may not be surprising that Jefferson Davis regarded black people as biologically distinct and inferior to white people, and black skin as an ugly stamp on the beautiful white canvas of normal human skin, and this black stamp as a signifier of the Negro's everlasting inferiority. This kind of segregationist thinking is perhaps easier to identify and easier to condemn as obviously racist. And yet, so many prominent Americans, many of whom we celebrate for their progressive ideas and activism, many of whom had very good intentions, subscribed to assimilationist thinking that also served up racist beliefs about black inferiority. We have remembered assimilationists' glorious struggle against racist policy and tucked away their inglorious partial blaming of inferior black behavior for racial disparities. After embracing biological racial equality, assimilationist ideas point to environment, hot climates, oppression, culture, and poverty as the creators of inferior black behaviors. Assimilationist solutions maintain that the ugly black stamp can be erased, that inferior black behaviors can be developed, given the proper environment. As such, assimilationist reforms constantly encourage black adoption of white cultural traits and/or physical ideals. In his landmark 1944 study, widely regarded as one of the instigators of the civil rights movement, Swedish economist and Nobel laureate Gunnar Myrdal wrote, "It is to the advantage of American Negroes as individuals and as a group to become assimilated into American culture, to acquire the traits held in esteem by the dominant white Americans." He had also claimed, in An American Dilemma, that in practically all its divergences, American Negro culture is a distorted development or a pathological condition of the general American culture. But there is, and has always been, a persistent line of anti-racist thought in this country, challenging those assimilationist and segregationist lines, and giving the line of justice hope. Anti-racist ideas have long conveyed that racist policy was stamped from the beginning of America, which explains why racial disparities have existed and persisted. Unlike segregationist and assimilationist ideas, anti-racist ideas have recognized that the different skin colors, hair textures, and cultural ways of black people and white people are on the same level, are equal in all their divergences. As the legendary black lesbian poet Audre Lorde lectured in 1980, "We have no patterns for relating across our human differences as equals." There was nothing simple or straightforward or predictable about racist ideas, and thus their history. Frankly speaking, for generations of Americans, racist ideas have been their common sense. The simple logic of racist ideas has manipulated millions over the years, muffling the more complex anti-racist reality again and again. And so, this history could not be made for readers in an easy-to-predict narrative of absurd racist notions clashing with reasonable anti-racist notions. This history could not be made for readers in an easy-to-predict, two-sided Hollywood battle of obvious good versus obvious evil, with good triumphing in the end. From the beginning, it has been a three-sided battle, a battle of anti-racist ideas being pitted against two kinds of racist ideas at the same time, with evil and good failing and triumphing in the end. Both segregationist and assimilationist ideas have been wrapped up in attractive arguments to seem good, and both have made sure to rewrap anti-racist ideas as evil. And in wrapping their ideas in goodness, people expressing segregationist and assimilationist ideas have rarely confessed to their racist ideas, let alone policies. But why would they? Confessing to their harms against humanity is not in their self-interest. It has been smarter and more exonerating for people to identify what they did and said as not racist. And the shrewdest and most powerful people have legalized their harmful activities, have managed to define their harms of human trading and enslaving and oppressing and killing outside the law. Likewise, the shrewdest and most powerful racist ideologues have managed to define their ideas outside racism. Actually, it was assimilationist scholars who first used and defined and popularized the term racism during the 1940s. All the while, they refused to define their own assimilationist ideas of black cultural and behavioral inferiority as racist. They defined only segregationist ideas of black biological inferiority as racist. And people who hold segregationist ideas, too, have always resisted identifying their ideas as racist. They have claimed instead that they were merely articulating God's word, nature's design, science's plan, or plain old common sense. All these self-serving efforts by powerful factions to define their racist rhetoric as not racist has left Americans thoroughly divided over and ignorant of what racist ideas truly are. They have allowed Americans who think something is wrong with black people to believe, somehow, that they are not racist. But to say something is wrong with a group is to say something is inferior about that group. These sayings are interlocked logically whether Americans realize it or not, whether Americans are willing to admit it or not. Any comprehensive history of racist ideas must grapple with the ongoing manipulation and confusion, must set the record straight on those who are espousing racist ideas and those who are espousing anti-racist ideas. My definition of a racist idea is a simple one. It is any concept that regards one racial group as inferior or superior to another racial group in any way. I define anti-black racist ideas, the subject of this book, as any idea suggesting that black people or any group of black people are inferior in any way to another racial group. Like the other identifiable races, black people are in reality a collection of groups differentiated by gender, class, ethnicity, disability, sexuality, culture, skin color, profession, and nationality, among a series of other identifiers, including biracial people who may or may not identify as black. Each and every identifiable black group has been subjected to what Kimberly Crenshaw has called intersectionality oppression stemming from the intersections of racism and other forms of bigotry, such as sexism, classism, ethnocentrism, and homophobia. For example, sexist notions of real women as weak and racist notions of black women as not really women have intersected to produce the gender racist idea of the strong black woman, inferior to the pinnacle of womanhood, the weak white woman. To call women as a group unintelligent is a sexist idea, To call black people as a group unintelligent is a racist idea. To call black women as a group unintelligent is a gender racist idea. Such intersections have also led to articulations of class racist ideas.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?